The following podcast is brought to you by the Village Zendo. For more information, visit villagezendo.org.
Good evening. Good evening, everybody. It's so wonderful to sit with all of you and to see you in the Zendo and to see you in the little gallery boxes all over. I often forget what the refuge Zazen actually is. Today I was I teach at the university, and my students had their midterm exam today, and you know, one student was taking some extra time and were taking some extra time. And I thought, well, you know, I can give you some extra time. And then I checked in with him, and it sort of became clear that more time was not really what was needed. You know, like he said, you know, I don't, I thought last class when we worked on this, I really understood it. But now when I had to do it myself, I don't even know where to start. So I said, well, why don't you write down in 5 minutes what makes sense to you, what you have questions about, and give me what you have. And then at the same time, I'm sort of thinking, I need to let Joey know that I will be a little bit late coming home because he knows that I have the Dharma talk tonight, so to plan the dinner so that there's plenty of time. So texted Joey saying, it will be another 10 minutes before I head out. You know, and then having dinner and then sitting down, and then as the Zazen starts to sort of realize all the momentum of the day that just continues to go, right? And I think I mentioned that before, but at work, there's a small group where we have Wednesdays around lunchtime a faculty and staff meditation. It's in the middle of the day. You know, so that's very often what that is like, right? It's not the Zazen where I think, ooh, it's like pristine, it's like sitting on a quiet beach in the Caribbean. It's like, no. But it's so beautiful, I think, to really have the chance to stop and really see the whole momentum and the whole machinery just go. And to be able to sit and watch it and to get pulled into the loop and the story and the planning for some time, and then at some point realize, oh, wait, you know, that was a conversation that I had this morning. I don't have to think about it right now. I can let that go for the moment, you know. So it was really, really wonderful to sit and to see what was going on, and also to reconnect with the body. And you know, as time moves on, things shift and change, right? So the person who's giving the talk now is in a very different frame of mind as the person who sat down at the beginning of Zazen. And probably also as the person 5 minutes into the Zazen and 10 minutes into the Zazen and 15 minutes into the Zazen. So beautiful. I've been thinking about liturgy and liturgy practice a lot. I had the good fortune for the winter session to serve as the liturgy master and to really get to work with, with many of you who are here in the room. Um, So for me, liturgy seems very strange, right? Because on some level, to my rational mind, it makes no sense whatsoever, right? It's like, what is this? Why do we do the things that we do? And yet I remember when I was in church, the singing often brought me to tears, and I had no idea why, right? I still have no idea why. It's just that's what happened. So there's something powerful when a group of people engages in something in a way that is, I don't know, pointing beyond itself in whatever way that might mean. And the other piece that I really enjoy about liturgy is it's sort of similar to Zazen in the way that it's really a beautiful mirror of my state of mind. Right? It's like in a similar way that in Zazen, if I'm sort of sitting and, you know, my thumbs are sort of like this, you know, my mind is probably gone. I'm sort of off on some kind of tangent. And, you know, sometimes if my thumbs are sort of, you know, like this, and it's really hard and tense, then often my mind and my body is very tense and tight. So I think in the same way in liturgy, when I'm sort of thinking about what's going to happen or what should have happened or what I did right or what I didn't do right or what I have to pay attention to or what somebody else is not doing right or what somebody else should have done, you know, it's, you know, you missed the cues are gone, right? I'm not in tune with what is going on in the Zendo. I'm not in touch with the whole of it, right? And in liturgy, that often means that, you know, a bell is missed or comes too early or sounds really awkward or, you know, the chanting is too late or too early, or the sound is off or not in tune with what everybody else is doing and what is going on. So it's really an immediate way of in a way bringing me back into attention and saying, oh, something just happened. I'm back. Where do I go now? What is sort of my next moment here? And I think in working with people, I think both in liturgy practice, but I think also very much in my work teaching mathematics, I can see the impact of those kinds of dynamics in people's minds as well. Right? So, well, you know, maybe the person who thinks of themselves as like a total klutz, right? Is the one who really has to carefully hold and hand off the offering dishes, right? And the immediate thought might be, oh no, I'm a total klutz. I'm the totally wrong person. I'm going to drop it. I'm going to blah 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 blah. You know, whatever stories come up from our past experience. You know, oh, I can't ring the bells. This is, you know, I don't have any sense of that, or I can't do this, or I can't do that. Right? And then, you know, and if that is what is on our mind, then that can easily get in the way of engaging with what is around us. And with my math students, I see that it's like as soon as something that looks like symbols or formulas shows up on the blackboard, you know, the shutters are coming down. It's like it goes back to the, you know, to the experience that people had in school trying to make sense of this. And it's just one mystery after the other. It's like you're trying to memorize it, to remember it, but it makes no sense whatsoever. And somehow other people sort of say, oh, it's this or it's that, and it's not a good experience. And it's like, this makes no sense whatsoever. And So how can I think fresh when my state of mind is that I'm a klutz, I'm not a math person, you know, I'm just not. Whatever I do, no matter what I do, nothing can make a difference. There's really no chance for me to make sense of something just because, you know, I'm not that kind of person. And then in liturgy, or, you know, the serve position is assigned, and that particular piece is part of that role. And you get to try it on, right? And for the moment, you know, maybe loosen that grip a little bit on what we're thinking. And I think for me at least, and maybe also for others, I think part of the reason why I came to Zen practice was because I had the sense that something was fundamentally broken about me, right? Or fundamentally broken about the world, or something was not quite right, right? And you know, and where do we go with that? I think it was Kabir who once said, I felt in need of a great pilgrimage, so I sat still for 3 days. Yeah. Really have a chance to see what is going on in a way that does not feel judgmental, but that just looks and says, this is what is going on right now for me. So I mentioned that I've been curious about liturgy and rituals. So I was very intrigued a while ago as I was driving home, and I was listening to, I think, a podcast, Fresh Air. And Terry Gross was talking to an author, Dimitris Higalatas, who had just written a book called Ritual: How Seemingly Senseless Acts Make Life Worth Living. I was like, Let me find out more about that. Because I've been very busy over the last year, I've not actually completed reading the whole book. So this is just sort of a report of of the state of things as of right now. And he really starts by saying that he really grew up with a lot of rituals. So there is one very memorable one that he mentioned, where, you know, people come from far to go to this particular church, and it's up on a hill, and there's a long staircase, and the ritual is to go up on your knees, right? And people do. Old people, young people, it's clearly something that is powerful for them. And he mentions that those rituals, as he looked at it, didn't make any sense to him. It's like, what is the meaning of this? Why do people do this? Right? And he mentioned that it was in a way exactly because sort of the why are people doing that, that he was actually drawn to studying this. First he sort of studied it from an anthropological view, but then also from a point of view of sort of consciousness studies. So what is it that it actually does to groups of people when we engage in ritual together? And he writes that without a single exception, all known human societies, whether past or present, have a range of traditions that involve highly choreographed, formalized, and precisely executed behaviors that mark threshold moments in people's lives. Right. So there's a lot in that. It's highly choreographed. So there are particular kinds of movements that are not just done individually, but as a group in a way that is very coordinated. It's very formalized. So it's not everyday kind of walking. It's not everyday kind of holding your arms or holding your body. It's special. It's unique. It's formal. It has a particular kind of energy and formality to it. And it's also important that these be executed precisely. And often in people's minds, the precision is important in the belief that in order to make the ritual work. So there's something about the precision. If I go up the stairs a few steps with my feet and only then get on my knees, that is not the precise ritual. So that may actually put in danger the question, the drive, what I've come here on my pilgrimage to ask. And it's also the case that he writes that these behaviors, which we call rituals, either have no explicit purpose at all, or even when they do, their stated goals are causally disconnected from the actions undertaken to achieve them. Right? So when the officiant goes up and offers incense, how is that connected to what we think happens in service? Right? Is there an effect? What is the effect, and how is that effect connected to those particular actions? And one feature of it, which I think is important, and I think which is also especially important in sort of in the way that we hold the Zen liturgy, is that because of the precision, they actually command a lot of focus and a lot of attention. Right? It's when my attention sort of slips, that means I lose my connection with everybody else. If I want to do it precisely, then I really need to be in tune. I need to be focused on what I'm doing and what others are doing. My attention really needs to be right here, right now, as much as possible. And if it isn't, if it slips, then it's exactly the lack of precision that is a way of actually bringing me back. And he was very curious. He went around and talked to people. So there is one big fire ritual in Spain that he went to, and that where he talked to many people, and said, why do you do this? And people were very puzzled by the question of why do we do this? Right? They couldn't even articulate why they did it. But they said it's because what we do. It's because what has always happened. So there is sort of a sense of timelessness, the tradition sort of has a view of being time honored. It's sort of handed down the precision, the instructions. And it is experienced as something that's truly vital and truly sacred. And I think that has been my experience. I remember the memorial services are such a beautiful way of really allowing me to get in touch with my own grief, which may be totally disconnected to the person who the memorial service is for. It's its own opportunity to be in touch with that, and the tears flow and the chanting goes on and the incense is offered. And then it's over and the tears stop and we move on to breakfast. Our study text right now is Uji, time being. And some of the passages that Dogen writes, I think also shed some light on this. So imagining having a liturgy position, listening, practicing, acting, giving cues. Dogen writes, the truth merely manifests itself for the time being as an ordinary person. Because you think your time or your being is not truth, you believe that the 16-foot golden body is not you. Yeah. You may believe there's something fundamentally broken about yourself, and that everybody else in the Zendo is, of course, a bodhisattva, except for you. Yeah. And you're trying to hide that. It's like you're the only imposter in the Zendo. You believe that the 16-foot golden body is not you. At this time, you enlighten the entire world with 3 heads and 8 arms, like a demon. And you enlighten the entire world with the 16-foot golden body. So even if you don't think of yourself, if you think that I'm not the Buddha everybody else is, yet in your actions, you enlighten the entire world with the 16-foot golden body. Even if you don't see it, even if you don't believe it. Dogen writes, to fully actualize the entire world with the entire world. To actualize the entire world with the entire world is called thorough practice. And in liturgy, I think that is very clear, right? It's a whole net of people linked with listening and with taking actions and making movements that requires that entire network, that entire field to come together. And it radiates out. And it's not just that it's a liturgy group who does that, but it really creates a network, that a structure that holds everyone in the space. Thus, the time being half actualized is half of the time being completely actualized. Right? So if you think of yourself as half actualized, there may be pieces of what you're doing, how you're acting, how you're relating, how you're energetically connected to others that is actually fully and completely connected. Again, we may see it or we may not see it. And it says, a moment that seems to be missed is also completely being. Right? This is like the compassion of liturgy practice, right? It's like, if the bell comes at this time, and it usually comes at a different time, it came at this time, right? And this is the complete manifestation of that network in that particular moment. In the same way, even the moment before or after the moment that appears to be missed is also complete in itself, the time being. That's where I often get caught, right? It's like, one bell is too early or too late or wrong or something. And then it's like, I should have blah, 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 blah. But even that moment is complete in itself. Because that is part of everything, right? And it has its place, and it's important, and it's there. And Dogen writes, vigorously abiding in each moment, vigorously abiding in each moment is the time being. And again, in liturgy practice, you can't just at some point sort of say, this was wrong, I'm just leaving, right? It's like you vigorously have to ring the next bell, go up to the altar with the officiant if that is your role, hit the mukugyo if that is what your role is, right? Vigorously abiding in each moment is the time being. So that's really the invitation. The invitation that I see of liturgy practice. And if you haven't had a chance to engage in it, I would encourage you. It's a beautiful practice, especially on Sesshin, when we have time to really dig in together and experience together and try it out together and fail together and do things wrong together and really all be held as we hold the larger Sangha. So let me close with a few words from the teachers. So this is Taizan Maizumi in Appreciate Your Life. He writes, "You do not think you are completely free. So you practice, trying to liberate yourself. But what is binding you? Look around you," he writes. "Nothing is binding you, and yet you cannot see it. You feel as if you are bound by something. Buddha calls this delusion." What do you feel bound by? And then I'm the last quote. I'm on a gratefulness email list. So every morning I sort of get a gratefulness quote, which is just for me sort of a lovely way of beginning the day. And earlier this year, there was a note that came around that reads as follows. "When we are willing to be intimate with what actually is here now, to look directly at all of our experience, we might recognize that this is our life, however different from our thoughts and ideas about it." And this is a quote from Enkyu. Thank you all. Be well.